qalbi titnikket li qed ikoll l-inġiel dan ir-raġel Albini iħalli daru fix-xuhitu. Imma marbut iġġieġu li jimgawċi jilqawkom għal episodju ieħor ta' Taħtitek Leo. U llum bdejna bi kwotazzjoni li tingħad li qala Sulejman meta fl-aħħar tal-assedju ta' Rodi tal-1522 keċċa l-barra lill-Gramastru l-Adam mal-kavalliri tiegħu. Jekk għaliex jew le m'iniex ċert, però hija frażi romantika li tħobb tiġi ripetuta ħafna u li naħseb tiġbor daqsxejn il-ħsieb ta' dak li ħankun qed nitkellmu fuq illum. Għaliex jiena għalihem illum ħanitkellmu dwar appuntu l-assedju ta' Rodi tal-1522 minħabba anki li is-sena 2022 hija il-500 anniversarju ta' dan l-assedju. Nafx li tgħid ħaġa inti qabel li nintroduċu l-mistieden tagħna?
Le, ta' ejja morru. Ja ċert li s-semmija tagħna ħajħdu gost jintaqgħu mal-mistieden tagħna, mistieden li żgur ħajtina ħafna informazzjoni li naf li aħna ċana għaliha.
Fil-fatt il-mistieden tagħna llum huwa Dr. Simon Phillips li huwa research fellow fl-Università ta' Ċipru u fellow tar-Royal Historical Society tar-Renju Unit. U għadu kemm lesta xogħol editorjali fuq ktieb blisem The 1522 Siege of Rhodes, Causes, Courses and Consequences li sar joħroġ għall-ħabta ta' Ġunju tal-2022 appuntu fl-okkażjoni tal-anniversarju ta' dan l-assedju. So, Simon, a warm welcome to you to our program. I actually started out with that famous quotation, which is attributed to Suleiman the Magnificent. I'll just read it out to you. It saddens me to have to oblige this brave old man to leave his home. Which, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it does capture sort of the romantic flair with which the Siege of Rhodes, like others, have tended to be remembered. And so we're keen with you to explore fact and fiction around this dramatic episode
which we're commemorating
the 500th anniversary, in fact. So perhaps you could start by giving us a bit of the highlights of this siege.
Yes, I will. I'm honored to be here on the program, first of all, and certainly I'll start with an overview of the siege, a little bit of background to it as well, first of all. There are various accounts of the siege, and the dates vary slightly, but in general the progression of events seems to tally together. First of all, hospitaller spies in Constantinople reported on Ottoman preparations against Rhodes from at least early March in 1522, and the Grand Master diligently began to repair the defences. They managed to get wine from Crete, and the corn on the island was cut when half ripe. The Grand Master managed to get several captains of ships to come and to the aid of Rhodes, who were passing by, and musters were held in May. They found that the number of people in the town was between 3,000 and 4,000, besides 1,500 to 2,000 villagers. But one has to add to that number the women and children of the town and the countryside. Historian Kelly De Vries has suggested that the Ottoman planning for the siege began some 6 months before the fleet arrived at Rhodes, which would mean January 1522. And this would seem to be corroborated by the hospitaller's records, as the very last entry in the Pax Citra Marine was on the 29th of January. Pax Citra Marine concerned the grants of land and appointments to positions on this side of the sea, that is, the Eastern Mediterranean. That there were no entries from February onwards suggests that the hospitallers knew by that time an attack was forthcoming and were urgently preparing for it. So they had other business rather than just the ordinary everyday grants.
Clearly there was a sense that a storm was was going to break on them.
There was a sense there'd been some for some time, but they didn't know for certain when it was going to come or whether they were going to be the target. Yeah. They certainly knew by the 8th of May, when a letter was received from Suleiman announcing his intention to take the town and offering to protect the knights and receive them into his service.
Oh, really?
If they would surrender.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
But was it a realistic kind of offer, you think, or was it always known?
Well, the hospital response, according to the knight Jacques de Bourbon, wrote that they said they would answer it with good strokes of artillery. that would be his welcome to Rhodes, as far as the hospitalers were concerned. So they were not intimidated by this letter at all.
Impressive.
The hospitaler fleet left Constantinople on the 18th of June, and according to Bourbon, the fleet under the command of Mustafa Pasha, Suleiman's second vizier, sailed from Constantinople and Gallipoli and totaled some 250 vessels, including 103 galleys, 25 to 30 galleries that were used to create a sea blockade during the siege. A further fleet sailed from Syria in early July, bringing the total number of ships to some 400.
Wow. That's astounding, isn't it?
This is, well, if he's correct in his numbers, we'll
see. Yes.
He's carried some 165 to 200,000 people, both soldiers, sailors, as well as laborers. On their way, they landed on Kos, but were driven back to their ships. The Turks landed on Rhodes itself between the 24th and 26th of June. And on the same day, the Grand Master managed to send messages to the Pope and Emperor asking for help. After this, they also held a celebration for Mass in the Church of St. John, and the Master presented the keys of the town to St. John, beseeching him to take it in his keeping. This is a way of showing the call for God to protect them.
Yes.
On the 26th of June, the Ottoman ships arrived in the Bay of Trianda, southwest of Rhodes town, unloading their supplies and weapons of war, and then returned to Turkey to bring more supplies, a process that was continually repeated between then and the 10th of July. Meanwhile, Suleiman set out on the 16th of June from Constantinople, marching overland with the bulk of his army to Marmaris, where he arrived on the 28th of July and was met by the fleet. The Turkish artillery consisted of six cannons shooting stones of 3.5 feet, 15 pieces of iron for stones of 5 or 6 spans, 14 great bombards for stones of 11 spans, and a great number of smaller pieces and handguns, including 12 shotguns that shot stones upwards. The point is, with such a large force, it was clear that Suleiman meant business. This was not just a seasonal attack.
No, it wasn't a summer camp.
No, it was certainly not. Well, what happened, in summary, was a war of attrition. The sieges constructed mounds of earth against the gates of Auvergne and Spain and the gates Cape of Italy, 10 to 12 feet higher than the walls. And this is mentioned in all sources, both hospitaler and Ottoman sources. So it was quite an important point. Early on in the siege, the steeple of St. John's Church was beaten down, which was a great blow because it was used as a lookout post to check on what the Ottoman movements were. Within a month, the walls of England and Spain were beaten down, even with the nails that protected those parts of the walls. On the 4th of September, two mines were fired at the Boston of Spain and Auvergne, and at the Bulwark of England. The latter was cast down, and the Ottomans made an assault with handguns that were repulsed with the loss of some 1,000 or more soldiers. On the 9th of September, another attack was made on the Bulwark of England, and the mine fired, followed by an assault in which about 2,000 Turks were slain. On the 17th of September, they made another assault without result. And on the 24th, the bulwark of Spain was lost and then regained again. This method of bombardment and assault continued until by the end of November, both sides were tiring of the battle. Sort of reminds you of the First World War, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
The bombardments and then attacks.
Absolutely. It's a trench-like kind of conflict.
It is. In fact, it was very interesting that you mentioned the amount of laborers that had joined the Ottoman army. Most of them were going to be actually digging trenches and digging themselves in, trying to find access to various weak points.
That's right. And it's something that I mentioned in article, which was this was to commemorate the siege of Malta, actually, a few years ago.
Yes, in fact, I love that article. Used. Yes, the sappers used, and this is something that is really fascinating. And when you actually see, you know, the land around the city of Rhodes, it must have been hard labor to dig those trenches in that heat in summer.
And being fired upon, just
in case, you know, just to add some more stoking the fire, so to speak.
So we're at the end of November, and it seems like the situation is not really going one way or the other.
Yes, that's right.
And Suleiman is present all throughout.
He's present from the end of July. And that's perhaps why they didn't leave or give up.
Of course,
because for those who were besieging, they must have felt a little bit disheartened that they hadn't managed to get into the city by now. Most sieges last 1 or 2 months at the most. Something which, without Suleiman, I think they would have given up and gone home for the winter.
Because, of course, sieges in winter are not very usual.
No, they're not.
No.
Suleiman had his reasons for staying, but I'll just continue a little bit, and then we'll discuss why he did that, maybe. Mm-hmm. Suleiman offered to, to let the hospitalers and all the citizens go with their goods and jewels, if the town was yielded. And those that chose to stay would not pay tribute for 5 years. Suleiman even offered ships to transport them. He was really keen for them to go.
surrender
without continuing. And maybe he was worried his troops would turn against him.
Yes, of course. Can I ask a simple, a particular question? The famous explosion of the cathedral or the Church of St. John. When did this happen? And do we have information or are the legends true of hidden powder underneath the church? What is the information that we have?
I think that it's this event happened in the 1850s, I think.
Yes.
Sometime after the cathedral, yes. St. John of the Colosseum, as it was called, lasted until then.
Yes.
And there's no reason to doubt that that happened, because okay. It was used as a gunpowder store. When you go there now and have a look at it, there's not much to see, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately, in fact.
That tends to be the case when things blow up.
But you can get an idea from the 19th century travelers who sketched it, so we do have an idea of what it looked like.
Okay, so Suleiman offers truce conditions to them. What do they do at that point?
And Grand Master himself didn't want to surrender. But under pressure of the commons of the town, he eventually submitted. He went to Suleiman's camp the day after Christmas and was well treated and assured that the promises of the conditions of the surrender would be kept. And so on the 1st of January 1523, the Grand Master and the Metropolitan of Rhodes, the head of the Greek Church, were the last to leave the island. And the rest is history, really.
Yes. It must have been some new year for them, no? Just packing and leaving. And I always imagine there's always a lot of tension and fear in those moments when you're accepting the conditions of surrender, but you're at the complete benevolence of your enemy. Will they keep their word or not?
Yes. There were some of the Turkish troops did loot, and there was violence after the surrender for a short time. Suleiman probably let that a little bit happen rather than face trouble with his troops. Yes. There was in the Arabic sources they say that the reason for the 1480 siege failure was because the commander there forbade any looting, and so the troops got discouraged and didn't want to fight anymore. So Suleiman let a little bit of looting go on so that they'd be satisfied that way. And then told them
He told them to stop, basically.
That's right. That's right.
What had led to this siege, Simon? I mean, we know there was the one of 1480 before, which had failed. So this was like the second siege of Rhodes by the Ottomans. When they were already in control of pretty much almost all of the Eastern Mediterranean. So why expend all that energy and resources on Rhodes?
Well, there were another number of different reasons. The ones that you find mentioned in the sources, again, both Ottoman and Hospitaller and Western sources, are that Rhodes was a base for corsairing, and it interrupted the trade route from Constantinople to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And this became particularly annoying for the Ottomans after their conquest of Egypt in 1517. So it was from that point on that they really started to think of attacking Rhodes. There are other reasons as well, though. Suleiman wished to start his reign with victories that surpassed his predecessors, namely to take Belgrade and Rhodes, failures of which were considered to be stains on the Ottoman military history.
Mm.
And, of course, he took Belgrade in 1521 and then could set his sights on Rhodes. There are other reasons, though. It was necessary to take Rhodes to allow the Ottoman expansion into the central Mediterranean. In other words, to extinguish a powerful Christian military base on Rhodes that could attack them if they wanted to go into the central Mediterranean.
Hmm.
And also, I think there's another reason which isn't talked about quite as much, is that the descendants of Prince Jem were still based on Rhodes. So if they take Rhodes, they could extinguish a dynastic challenge to Suleiman's reign as well.
Right. These were the descendants of one branch of the family that also That's claimed right, the throne, yes. didn't they?
That's right. So they were relatives of Suleiman, but Jem had been challenging Suleiman's grandfather. So there was always this possible threat of a dynastic challenge.
And what happens to them in the end?
They got killed. That's one of the things. They were murdered once they took control. Everyone was allowed to leave except for them.
I see.
Gosh.
And the males were slaughtered, and the females were sent to Constantinople.
I don't know who had the worst fate of them.
Yes.
Quite the pickle.
Goodness. And what would be the consequences of the siege once it was over?
Well, there are a number of them which I mention in the forthcoming book. But I think the main ones we have to say is that, first of all, the order itself was made homeless and was put in the position of having to justify its existence. So there was this crisis within the hospitaler order itself. Another one was that the Ottomans gained a near monopoly on trade in the eastern Mediterranean, and they were soon to threaten the Venetians, who were their only competitors after 1522. First, of course, on Cyprus, and then in the following century on Crete. The other worry, which is clear from the sources at the time, was that Suleiman may attempt an attack on Italy, and the West in general may face an Ottoman attack. So all of those are reasons. And, of course, another consequence, which is perhaps very significant for us as historians, is that the order's archives were transferred to Malta. Some of them, those that survived. They may not have survived if they had stayed here on Rhodes.
Sure.
All of the talk we have now would not be taking place. So I think that's quite an important
impact
consequence as well.
Simon, we have just a handful of minutes left to conclude. Time flies by. I wanted to ask you, why is it you think that 1565 in Malta gets labeled the Great Siege, but not 1480 and 1522 for Rhodes? I mean, one is a victory, one is a loss. What is it that you think makes for a different dynamic? And perhaps we can end on this point.
Well, I think the reason why the sieges of Rhodes are not great, but 1565 is great, the answer simply is that the siege of Malta stopped the Ottoman advance in its tracks, whereas 1480 was a successful defense, but it was only a temporary respite.
Postponement.
Of course, 1522 was ultimately a failure, despite valiant defense. However, at the time, the commentators did consider it to be a success. Jack Bourbon even called it the great and marvelous siege, even though it was a very cruel siege. But still, it was ultimately considered a failure, and some of the people who wrote, like Jacques von Barnes, the reasons for him doing so, he said, was to stop the talk in Rome, where he says even the marbles talk, and tongues talk freely, and he didn't mean that in a good way. He wrote it in defense of the hospitalers, because obviously in Rome there was there must have been some criticism of their defense of Rhodes at that time.
Of course.
So I think that there was no doubt that Malta was a success, and the other two were not. That's why it was considered great. That's something perhaps we.
I think
great has come later than yes. at the time.
And I think we have grounds there to be catching up once again with you, Dr. Phillips, to actually discuss this in the greater sway of things, so to speak. Dr. Phillips, we're nearing our end of our interview, and I would really once again like to thank you for accepting our invitation, and we will surely be getting in touch once again to bother you for another few minutes, because there's so much to talk about. However, our listeners will be very interested to follow developments with regards to the book about the Siege of Rhodes, and how can they follow you on social media? And can you tell us in a few seconds all about this book?
Yes, I mean, it's a number of different people have looked at different aspects of it. It's due to be published in June this in the fourth next year. Okay. I do have a web page,
People can look you up over there and
yes.
stay
they'll
in touch with all the developers.
You'll either get me or a musician drummer.
Okay.
The same name.
So if you hear the sound of drums, you're in the wrong place.
That's right.
Dr. Phillips, thanks again for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
As is Samia, dikkin għet l-intervista tagħna ma' Dr. Simon Phillips, jiena li jimgawċi fisem Emanuel Buttigieġ, inselmilkom u nintaqaw il-ġumad diħla.